Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello and welcome to The Gridiron Show. I'm Will Gavin. Alongside me, Michael McQuaid, Gridiron's Features Editor, Simon Clancy. Hello, boys.
Hello.
Mike, answer me one question. When we're in that pre-show countdown and music thing, can you see me dancing since the host can still see you?
Like, this is why I love going live, because first off, how's the form, everyone? But like, Will was literally going like this. The whole time
I was having a great time, and then I thought to myself, Michael can probably see me, so I quickly flipped him the bird just to make sure that
I enjoyed it. It was good fun.
Look, we are now, what, 11 days away from Super Bowl 57. We'll be out in Phoenix, Arizona to see the Philadelphia Eagles go head-to-head with the Kansas City Chiefs, the Kelce Bowl, the Andy Reid Bowl, two very good football teams facing off in the sight of my first Super Bowl, and still probably the best one that I've seen live, to be honest. Absolutely sensational game between the Seahawks and the Patriots. And the first of the latter career three for Sir Thomas Brady, who today announced that after 23 seasons in the NFL, 22 as a starter, the first of which he had as a losing season, by the way, this past year, despite still finishing as a 19-time division champion, Tom Brady is now retiring for good. That's what he said. And you know what? It seemed like a legitimate message. He genuinely felt emotional. It does feel ridiculous that we're back here having the same conversations that we were having a year ago to the day, literally to the day, the 1st of February last year. But you know, 7-time Super Bowl champion, 5-time Super Bowl MVP, 3-time league MVP. He leads the league in every passing category humanly possible. Over 100,000 passing yards in his career. He's going straight to the Hall of Fame. He's the greatest of all time. All of that stuff. You know, what more really at this point is there to say, Simon Clancy?
Yeah, I mean, we said it all last year, so let's move on. No, I mean, you could see how emotional he was. And I mean, it must be emotional knowing that Mike McCarthy ended your career. I mean, that would be enough to get anybody upset, quite frankly. And also, you know, losing your marriage to only go 8-9 and lose to the Dallas Cowboys in the first round of the playoffs must be pretty harsh. So, yeah. But no, all jokes aside, you know, the greatest quarterback of all time. Don't think he's the greatest passer of all time. He's certainly the greatest quarterback of all time. Seems like a really good guy. And, you know, the longevity and the, you know, as a Dolphins fan who played, you know, watched him in the AFC East year after year, just the inevitability of success was, I suppose, the most incredible thing, and to continue to do that at such a high level, to continue just to, whenever you get the ball last, you know he's going to win. You know, he was never going to turn it over, he was never going to throw the key pick, it was always going to score, it was always going to happen. Go back to that Super Bowl down 28-3. I don't think anybody thought they were going to come back, but as soon as that comeback started, you thought there's only going to be one winner here. And that's testament to his mental fortitude and to his ability, and the NFL will be a lesser place. I mean, I'm interested to see what happens actually with the with the broadcast booth. You know, Greg Olsen has become comfortably the best analyst in the NFL. And Brady obviously has this huge contract to go to Fox. And what will happen? Because Greg Olsen's doing the Super Bowl. He's clearly the top guy. And are they suddenly going to, you know, oust him and put Brady in? Or will they have a three-man booth? I'll be interested to see how that works too. So plenty of questions going forwards. But, you know, the greatest of all time and an unbelievable career.
Tony Romo for comeback player of the year next year after those comments from Simon Clancy there. He has had a down year, though. It's got to be said.
He has had a down couple of years, actually, Romo, I think. He's sort of mailing it in a little bit.
Maybe a little believing of the own hype. Maybe he's gone down the Scott Hansen route. Yeah, that's right. I said it, McQuaid. And what?
I've said nothing. It's funny about Romo. Like, he seemed to have more energy last week, but it's like, yeah, oh, Jim, I can't believe
the playoffs. I hope he had some energy. Christ,
but
go on, sorry, Mike.
We've got a comment from D Tarango on Twitter saying Tony Romo is the worst. So this is the benefits of being live. I don't know, he is mailing it in. Had a bit more energy last week, but it's almost like he's turning up and he's got like a sheet of like buzzwords. And he tries to use each buzzword.
You know when CBS told him to stop calling the plays, that's when he started to go downhill, because that kind of enthusiasm about, I know what's coming, here's what's coming, look out for what's coming, and it inevitably did. That was what, for me, made him so special. It wasn't like tipping the picks in the draft. It wasn't like, it was just giving you a sort of an idea of what to look for. And CBS stopped him from doing that. I also think the golf thing, you know, wanting to be a kind of a golf pro, and just the inane, insane amount of practice that must go into, you know, becoming a professional golfer has probably hit that as well. But I've heard some stories about the work or lack thereof that he's done in terms of research and those sorts of things. So who knows? But ultimately, it'll be fascinating to see what Fox do and the decision they make in terms of whether or not they, you know, they boot Olsen down to the number two chair and stick Brady straight in. So, you know, and it'll be a, you know, if you've got the number one commentary booth, or certainly the number one summarizer, and then all of a sudden in another Super, because I think they have next year's Super Bowl as well, don't they, Fox? If you, you know, you bump Olsen down and Brady up, and Brady's, you know, really mediocre or middle of the pack, which I doubt he will be, but, you know, you never know. These things do take time. It will be interesting to see what the reaction is, especially if Olsen's sort of languishing away with the number two crew. So,
yeah. Look, from the Brady perspective, you got it right that it's the inevitability of success. It was the sustained success. It was the, I kind of got into it a little bit today with somebody who works at my other place of work, because whilst there were, there was real enthusiasm to cover the story from most people. I went on air almost immediately, and lots of shows are looking to book guests. And like, we've got Shane Vereen coming on with a show later to talk about his experiences of playing with Brady. That's all very exciting. There's one particular presenter who will remain nameless here, but if you know anything about the station I work for, you can probably figure out who it is, who essentially just went, I don't care. Why should I care? American sport, I don't care. I'm like, in the same way that if you didn't love tennis, you'd still appreciate and respect what Roger Federer has done to the point in his career that he's done it. If you didn't like snooker and you didn't like bell ends, you'd still like Ronnie O'Sullivan for what he has achieved and what he is. You'd respect what he has done for the duration of his career. I found it absolutely astonishing that it wasn't actually. Jim White loves Tom Brady.
Wow.
Jim White, absolutely, honestly, anytime Jim White does an interview about the NFL, it's Tom Brady is mentioned at least seven times. Stop writing down names on a piece of paper.
I was wondering what that noise was. Like, what's he doing?
Trying to get me in trouble here. Neither. He's gotten really into the NFL the last couple of years. He keeps talking to me about it in the office. It's been very odd. Anyway. I think like the appreciation for the achievement, for the fact that he does need to go down as one of the all-time great sports people of all time, let alone just in the sport of the NFL, which we obviously regularly cover. You know, he won two Super Bowls in his 20s, three Super Bowls in his 30s, and two Super Bowls in his 40s. That is honestly astonishing. That is utterly and completely ridiculous. No, it's still not there. Still there. But what I like about it is it shows just how irrelevant this prick is, that he's not coming to mind for you.
Wow.
I'll jump on this and add this. I was saying to, ironically, met one of my mates at lunchtime. He's a Patriots fan, and was texting him after it happened at lunchtime, and we both seen Brady play in 2016 and 2017 in Denver. We just went over for the crack, and sort of thought when we left in 2017, well, we'll not see Brady play again. So to see him, I think for a lot of UK European fans to have the opportunity not just to see him on TV play in Germany, but for a lot of people to see him in Germany. I mean, we were out there, we had great fun. It was an incredible experience. But yeah, it sort of shows to his longevity. Honestly, he will go down as a legend, and I just feel grateful as a fan even that I've seen him play. Like, it's just incredible.
Actually, probably the player that I've seen, thinking about it, one of the most times live, because it's been four Super Bowls, including the loss to Philadelphia. It would have been five if we'd gone to the pandemic Super Bowl, but I just couldn't hack 2 weeks in a Canadian hotel to just to be able to get into the country. Sorry, the budget just wasn't going to allow for it. But multiple times in London, Germany, 4 Super Bowl appearances. Like, I did genuinely stop. I did genuinely get to a point where, like, we were going to the Super Bowl every year, and it was almost getting dull having that same conversation of what will a 5th Super Bowl mean to Tom Brady? What will a 6th Super Bowl mean to Tom Brady? And like the Eagles, to beat Tom Brady in a Super Bowl, had to put together one of the most aggressive game plans I think I've ever seen in a major game in any sport, certainly in the NFL, to go and beat him. And they had to put 41 points on what was a good Patriots defense that year to do it as well. So huge respect to him, huge respect to his career. Just, yeah, why are you putting us through this again? What I will say, in the last 48 hours, I had genuinely talked to myself into Tom Brady to the 49ers. It had been something which I'd objected to relatively heavily over the previous 4 months, partially because of the performance of Purdy, partially because I do still believe that Trey Lance has that upside and that potential, and partially just because, you know, I've gone through years of Tom Brady. I also think that if the offensive line isn't good, he would have struggled whatever team he was on this year, and you saw that in Tampa Bay this year. But with Purdy going down, with Lance so untested, with Purdy now missing 6 months after tearing his UCL, I had kind of talked myself into being okay with Tom Brady in the Bay. And then he goes and retires. I mean, come on, guys.
I thought he might have went to Miami, Si, and I was interested to see your response earlier on, just for the crack. Imagine he went to Miami, stayed in state for the wife and the kids. It would have been funny to see what would have happened. Like, I mean, like, the whole off season would have been nuts if he had went to Miami. Think about
I think what happened with that is that ship sort of sailed 18 months ago. And I think, you know, the Dolphins coming out very quickly at the end of the season and saying, Tua is our quarterback. That's exactly what's going to happen. And I just don't think that you could, you can't lead the NFL in passer rating and play as well as he did and be in the heart of the MVP race when he got injured. To suddenly say, oh, you know what, we're going to replace you for a year with Tom Brady. That just would have made no sense whatsoever. I think, you know, I don't think Tom Brady can run the Mike McDaniel offense as well as Tua can in terms of the specificity of those plays, that quick release. You know, the offensive line, especially if Teron Armstead is out, isn't amazing anyway. So you're not going to be protecting him. No, people, I'm not saying that Tua is better than Tom Brady, but although I actually think probably based on last season, he clearly was. But I just don't think that, you know, the marriage of a Mike McDaniel offense and how it was run when it was being run at an elite level during the season when the Dolphins were 8-3, would marry with Brady. So I never really saw that happen. I think that was, you know, Mike Florio's kind of wet dream at Pro Football Talk, but I think the reality was it was never going to happen. And I think that was quashed then finally by both Chris Greer and Mike McDaniel coming out at the end of the season, controlling the narrative and saying, look, Tua's our quarterback. That's, and really what the Dolphins are looking for is a backup quarterback who can stay healthy. So someone like Taylor Heineke, for example, in free agency would be a perfect Case Keenum, somebody that, you know, who's not, you know, can come in, potentially play 2-4 games if Tua does get hurt, and can, you know, not get hurt themselves the way that Teddy Bridgewater seemed to do every time he went under center. So no, I don't think Brady was ever going to be an option in Miami.
The one thing I will say, and I'll leave it at this, we'll never see the like of it again. 7 Super Bowls. Absolutely ridiculous. Like, the man is nearly like,
Will Mahomes get there?
Nah.
I mean, 5 AFC Championship games, already in a third Super Bowl of his career. Like, will he win 7? No, but could he be a 5-time Super Bowl champion?
And he's still, 27?
At the rate they're going right now.
He's 27, and, you know, quarterbacks are staying in the game longer and longer. At what point, let's say he retires at 42, so you're saying that he's still got another, 15 more seasons? I mean...
What you would say to it is, You hope that the Bengals, the Bills, can find a way to sustain success with their top-tier quarterbacks, that maybe the Chargers finally figure that thing out as well, with a quarterback who could very much be in that top tier. And it's when it coming back to the legacy thing, and we were talking about this with the idea of whether Aaron Rodgers might retire, but like people asking the question about guys going back to Super Bowls, guys winning Super Bowls, like it's not actually like Tom Brady has given us a completely new and unrealistic standard for what a top tier quarterback can be and do. There are plenty of career greats like Jim Kelly and Dan Marino who never won one. There are plenty who won just one when you probably early on in their career thought they'd win four or five. You've got guys like Ben Roethlisberger who won two very early in his career and then never went back again. Aaron Rodgers won the one early in his career, went to the second one, never went back again. Russell Wilson appeared in two in his first 3 years, won one of those, hasn't gone back again, and we'll get onto Denver in a minute, maybe never will. Like, these guys can be top tier, Hall of Fame level guys, and it is very, very hard to get to and win a Super Bowl. Like, it shouldn't be underestimated how mental it is that he's done it seven times.
I've been an NFL fan since 1984. The two best passers of the ball, in terms of not just guys with big arms who can throw it all over the park, but guys who can throw it all over the park with accuracy, with touch, with timing, all of those things, are Marino and Rodgers. And combined, they have one Super Bowl between the two of them. And they are the two greatest throwers of a football, the two greatest passers of football I've ever seen. And it's mad to think that in their collective, what, 30 odd plus years in the NFL, that they've only won one Super Bowl. So that, you know, that's the sort of thing where you look at a Josh Allen, you look at a Justin Herbert, you look at a Joe Burrow, you look at, you know, the young quarterbacks, Jalen Hurts, Tua, guys that you can throw into that category and think, you know, there's a long way to go, especially when you've got someone like Mahomes who potentially is on the, you know, is on the verge of winning his second Super Bowl. So it'll be very interesting to see. I just think it's so encouraging, so great for the game that you've just got so many young studs at the position in the league. And, you know, you hope that the younger guys, whether that's Kenny Pickett or Trey Lance or whoever it is around the league, start Jordan Love, you know, start to pick up, and that position really does become as premium as it's been perhaps for any time that I can certainly remember.
I was asked as well earlier about where, like, surely come August, September, people will be knocking on Brady's door. And I'm like, trust me, guys, people are probably knocking on Brady's door right now, now that they know that he's likely to have not been with the Buccaneers next year anyway. And apparently there is reporting that he had that people close to him that he'd said, I either go back to Tampa Bay or I retire. Like, he wasn't interested in a new team, apparently, is what he said. But yeah, we are at a stage where, yes, there are some unbelievable top-tier talents at the position, but also there are probably 16 teams in the NFL who aren't convinced about their starter next season. Yeah. Like, there's the dichotomy between the top end and the bottom end right now. There is like a middleway split in the league, and guys like Jimmy Garoppolo and Derek Carr and these kind of very, very mid-tier quarterbacks at best are going to be clamored after like you wouldn't believe. So yeah, if Tom Brady suddenly decided, do you know what, now that I have got a lot more free time, now that I, you know, I'm not being a full-time dad or husband, yeah, there's lots of people are going to want me.
I think he'll get calls, Mike, don't you? But I just don't think he's gonna, I don't think he's coming back.
Like, genuinely, no harm to the crack if he comes back again. Nah, we're not talking about it again. Unless he goes to the Niners, and we can talk about it for an hour. I genuinely, if he comes back, it was like look, the last thing I will say is, I was getting quite emotional watching that video. The man was near tearing up. You could see how much it meant to him. He was giving it up. He was letting go, and you could see that in the 30-second video. I think we're done. It has to be done, surely.
Right, let's move on and talk about some of the other, because there's been other really big bits of news before we get to the, you know, little matter of Super Bowl 57. And Michael, we have to, of course, start off in Denver, because Sean Payton, it's not actually confirmed yet, right? They've got the compensation sorted, but he's not signed on the dotted line quite yet. However, it does look like Sean Payton's landing spot is going to be the Denver Broncos, the new head coach. It does mean that over the past two off seasons, with the compensation that they'll be paying in this situation, that between the quarterback and the head coach, they'll have given up 3 first-round picks, 3 second-round picks, a 5th-round pick, plus a handful of players, at least one, maybe two of which were half decent. I mean, Sean Payton is one of the great offensive and creative minds in the NFL. Like, you see those Peter King pieces that he did with Drew Brees and Sean Payton when he was allowed to go to their walkthroughs, and just how much attention he pays to the offense and how smart he is at the way he runs it. Where is your confidence level that this is the right hire to make it work in 2023 and beyond?
I have never been as unsure about something in my life, honestly, lads. Like, I'm the biggest jinx ever because I sent you this last night. I tweeted out at 6:30 UK time, it's 2029 and the Denver Broncos still have no head coach, and obviously Sean Payton gets hired that same day, which is just out of nowhere as well, because there was talk a few days ago that Sean Payton had missed. I think it was Ian Rappaport said there doesn't seem to be a lot of interest in Sean Payton, and then it just sort of came out last night. It's intriguing for me in two different elements. First off, the Broncos, since they won the Super Bowl when they had Gary Kubiak in, and obviously he left for different reasons, but whenever you bring in Vance Joseph and then you run it back, even though they really shouldn't have run it back, but they ran it back anyway, first time head coach, didn't work out. Look what he's doing now in Arizona, and look at, you know, maybe we'll get into a cycle next year. Vic Fangio, top class DC, didn't work out in Denver. But then to bring in Nathaniel Hackett, that doesn't work out. And then it went like for a month, and the amount of names that were coming out, you know, there's a lot of talk last week about D'Amico Ryans. It's concerning only for me because of the draft capital that's been given up. And it's not just the draft capital that's been given up for Sean Payton, but it's the draft capital that's been given up, obviously, for Russell Wilson, which at the time in March seemed like a masterstroke because everyone's going, oh my God, Russell Wilson, this Broncos team will challenge for the West. I'd love to know what the Walton Penner family have down as a marker for next season. What is their minimum expectation? Because as it stands right now, I just don't see how Sean Payton can go in and in the gusp of 6 to 7 months, turn around Russell Wilson to where he was and gain that confidence back in one season. I think it's definitely a multiple season plan, but I would love to know what's the expectation is there. Is it a wild card spot? Is it finish second or third in the West and get into the wild card? Or is it push for the West, try and win the Super Bowl in year one? I don't think that's going to happen. The thing that really annoyed me, and this is the second element, and I'll shut up and hand it over to you boys, is this. It almost turned into like Big Brother or Love Island or American Idol on Fox Sports last month. Colin Cowherd, Sean Payton sitting like this. Yeah, you know, Mickey Loomis is saying we can do this and do that. And I'm like, mate, this is not Monopoly. Like, I'm sitting waiting for my team to get a head coach in. I'm just glad it's done now and the talking's over. And yeah, I'm looking forward to watching the draft and just enjoying it, you know? I'm not bothered now.
So, Simon, you look at all those, everything that I totally valid concerns and pessimistic fan, and I get all of that. The difference is he's listed Vic Fangio there, who, as much as he was a brilliant DC, how many times have we seen a great coordinator not be a great head coach?
Yeah.
He was a first-time head coach.
Yep.
Nathaniel Hackett, a first-time head coach. Sean Payton has been there, done it, got the Super Bowl, got the ring, bought the T-shirt, had sustained success for the most part with the franchise as well. You know, the cap problems aside, which led to a couple of down seasons, but with a talented roster, this is a guy who should be able to bring success.
It's very interesting. I think if he can resurrect Russell Wilson, then I think it goes down as a good trade. But I think that Sean Payton has gotten away with a fair amount of mediocrity in his career. And I say this as the, you know, the Saints won the Super Bowl in 09,
yeah.
They were at 5-7 in the playoffs under Payton, including 3 home losses and a road playoff loss in a historically soul-crushing fashion with the touchdown of the Vikings. They went to 1 conference championship game and lost it at home. You know, he gets an awful lot of credit for having an offense that had, you know, Michael Thomas and Alvin Kamara and Drew Brees and Teron Armstead and that offensive line. And you could argue that other than the sort of half a decade when the Saints weren't good at all in Brees' prime, and then the half decade where they were blowing playoff games, that actually he's in many respects a sort of a Big Easy Mike McCarthy in a way.
I think Sean Payton's smarter than that. I do. I think he's a better play caller.
I'm not sold the record shows that. I'm not. You know, people criticize Mike McCarthy for only winning one Super Bowl with Aaron Rodgers. But where's the criticism for Sean Payton only winning one Super Bowl with Drew Brees? I mean, it's a fair, like, you know, we criticize Mike McCarthy. And I'm not saying like McCarthy is, you know, Tom Landry or Don Shula here. But I'm also saying that their records are very similar. They both blew big playoff games. You know, you talk about Green Bay in Seattle. You talk about, you know, New Orleans in Minnesota. Big historic crashes at the end of winnable playoff games. And, you know, did so with a whole heap of offensive talent. Now, he can be an offensive genius, and he's clearly, you know, you mentioned those Peter King articles. He's clearly a very bright guy. But at some point, the rubber meets the road. And when you've got no draft capital either, you know, that isn't a very good team. You know, you've traded away your best pass rusher in Bradley Chubb. You aren't replacing him anywhere. I just think it's I think it's very, very interesting that you'd give up a 1 and a 2. And I know that was the asking price, and I know that head coach is very important, but I'm just not sold it's the all-seeing, all-dancing jamboree that perhaps it could be. But the flip side to that is if he resurrects Russell Wilson, Mike, then, you know, you're going to be singing.
I think it's funny because, I think you've both hit very much nail on the head there. I think, Will, what you said about him obviously coming in with the track record, I agree. It's great to have somebody in that is, you know, has been there and done that and has actually been to the big dance and won the game. On the grand stage of things, the Broncos in that market in Colorado and outside of Colorado have been the team in that area for so many years. And now in Denver, I wouldn't say they're almost irrelevant, but you've got the NBA team, the Nuggets, where Nikola Jokic is a two-time MVP, probably going to win it again this year. And the Avalanche won the Stanley Cup last year. So they're almost panicking this year. And where people genuinely, we've seen it all year, there were empty seats in the stadium. Russell Wilson has not worked out, and they really bought in, not just on a player level, but on a commercial level to that. Yeah, like that is the key. Can they get Russell Wilson back? And then they work from there. You know, they have a lot of questions around free agency. I really remain to be convinced, but I will be sitting here with my flag in my hat this time next year, please God, getting ready to go to Vegas and watch the Broncos win the Super Bowl. That's my hope.
Can we just say that the Saints, who just grabbed a first round pick, though, puts them in the quarterback hunt, because currently the NFC South quarterback standings, as it were, are Kyle Trask, Desmond Ridder, Sam Darnold, and Andy Dalton. And it's not been very many times where we've been able to say that Sam Darnold is probably the best quarterback in the division. So, unique situation in the NFC South as well, a quarterback.
It is worth saying, though, that's their only first-round pick because of previous trades moving up to get two players in the last three drafts where there were big question marks over whether they should have moved up as much as I love Chris Olave particularly.
And we haven't talked about Bounty Gate either with Creighton.
And it's no, quite. That is a fair point. But it's also pick 29 because it's the Miami pick for Bradley Chubb, which came from San Francisco in the trade where they got Trey Lance. And that's the, so like it is a much traded pick, but it is that 29th overall pick. By the way, amazingly, because we'll talk about D'Amico Ryans in a minute. The 49ers now with D'Amico Ryans leaving have the joint most draft picks in the 2023 draft, but nothing in the first or second round. It's stupid. At some point, it's ridiculous and stupid.
That's crazy.
Yeah, isn't it? Just. No, it's a fair point on New Orleans. It does give them that first round pick, but you are looking at one of the back end of the kind of draft guys with that. And you know what? I think that does bring us on to the Houston Texans, unless you had any more you wanted to
get
off your chest on a Broncos perspective.
I just want to throw a point to Mike about, obviously, from a Miami point of view, it looks like Vic Fangio was going to be the defensive coordinator. There's now, you know, Tom Pelissero tweeted on Sunday that the deal was done. It seems like the deal isn't necessarily done, or that Fangio might have reneged on the deal. I know it wasn't signed, but it had been agreed. with his agent, who's also Mike McDaniel's agent, who's also Kyle Shanahan's agent. Rumor that he potentially would go back to San Francisco. Rumor that he's having an interview in San Francisco along with Chris Harris and with Steve Wilks. But then talked last night on Denver radio that he was going to Denver to be the defensive coordinator with Sean Payton. But I just, the thing for me that I want to ask you, Mike, is that, like, the Broncos have got comfortably the best young non-head coach defensive coordinator in the NFL in Isaiah Rivera. Why would they get rid of Rivera to hire a man who was sacked by the same team as head coach 12 months ago? That seems to make zero sense. And why would Fangio want to go back to Denver, to a place where he's a very prideful man? Why would he want to go back to a place where he was canned?
And not just canned, but relationships with players as well is one thing. For people listening to the podcast, Dave Logan from Colorado KOA calls Broncos games very, for me, he's as high up as somebody like Mike Kliss in Denver media. He reported that the Broncos were at least communicating with him in regards to that position. Who knows? Obviously, I'd like to see Evero stay, because you could see Evero long term going into the head coaching role in Denver. But the defense on a whole was probably one of the more positive points last season for the Broncos. So it's intriguing. I'm glad you've brought it up, because in case it does happen, we can keep that soundbite for the next few weeks. But I genuinely couldn't believe it when I seen it this way. I was like, wow, because that would be stunning if he came back in that capacity. But you could see Evero get picked up somewhere else, especially when he refused to take the job for 2 weeks whenever Hackett got fired. So I wonder why that was. But it's going to be interesting, and it's great to see after a few weeks, guys, that we're starting to get some movement in the head coaching. And I know you want to get some D'Amico Ryans to talk about.
Ed, by the way, on Evero, I thought he might be another name that was in the frame for the 49ers DC as well. So that was interesting that he hasn't been someone that's come up at the moment, if he isn't interviewing for head coaching positions. Let's get on to D'Amico Ryans. So D'Amico Ryans will be the new head coach of the Houston Texans, of course, for people who are newer to the sport. I guess D'Amico Ryans is recent enough that most people will remember that he spent 5-6 years there as a player before he went to the Eagles and then to becoming a coach. We are talking about the team who have both the second and 12th overall picks in this draft, 2 third round picks as well, with that trade for Deshaun Watson go to the Cleveland Browns. I think the first thing to say before on D'Amico Ryans himself, like with the stuff we've been doing from Tales from the Bay and with the stuff we've been doing with the TalkSport 49ers deal as well, I've spoken to a lot of guys in that defensive room, and universally the positivity on D'Amico Ryans as a human being is kind of astonishing. How calm he is as a leader, how brilliant he is at kind of leading by example, how he's been getting the best out of a lot of players, guys like, a lot of the second year guys who were drafted late in the draft last year, like Talanoa Hufanga, how he's got brilliant performances out of them. So I think we've said it a lot. There's a big difference between a great coordinator and a great coach. I think he is, if nothing else, a great coach. Whether he's a great head coach is yet to be seen. I do think there's a real opportunity with the fact that the Texans are going to be able to take a top-tier quarterback in this draft, the first or second quarterback off the board, depending on if Chicago managed to get out of that pick. The fact that they are going to be able to then also take one of the best non-quarterbacks in the draft at 12 and have plenty of other picks to be loaded up with as well. And the fact that actually the Texans showed a lot of fight. I don't think they're a hugely talented team, but I think there's enough there that there could be a relatively quick turnaround in Houston. Like, I think it's a great hire for where they are right now. I just, there's just going to be question marks over how quickly anyone can turn around the organization. When you look at them, Simon, and you look at the quarterbacks in this draft, and imagine that someone's going to jump above them to grab someone.
Yeah.
So who are they looking at, and what direction should they be going, and would they be going?
I think there's 4 quarterbacks in the draft that will go in the first round. Bryce Young, who would be my number one. I mean, he's undersized, but he has just got this inane pocket presence. He's just a great playmaker. He's just got that sort of Joe Burrow-y, Joe Montana-y, Tom Brady kind of just mindset, the ability to extend plays. He is small. He will probably measure in around about, or maybe just a tad under 6 foot. He's probably about 185 pounds. But he's got a good arm, not a great arm, but a good arm, certainly good enough. He is ready to play, and that would be my pick. Now, will a team move up to the number one spot? over and above Houston Tate. And you look at the Indianapolis Colts. Now, what Chris Ballard always likes is traitsy guys. And if you're looking for the kind of the Josh Allen sort of Justin Herbert alien, then Will Levis, the quarterback out of Kentucky, is absolutely that guy. Now, he's played 2 years in an NFL system under Liam Cohn and Rich Scangarello. So he understands that he's, you know, people will throw on the tape and they'll be like, oh, there's lots of incompletions and interceptions and, you know, guys running in the wrong direction. What's happening here? He doesn't look very good. He's this, he's that. And I think, you know, whenever you do evaluation of players, you are projecting them to the next level. And you have to look at the sorts of throws that Levis is making with the players that he's playing with. That five no-star offensive linemen, no talent at wide receiver, no talent apart from Chris Rodriguez at running back. So I think in terms of traits, that's something that, you know, somebody like Chris Ballard sitting there at four wanting to get his guy might move up. So I think Bryce Young's a perfect fit for D'Amico Ryans. The other two quarterbacks would be Anthony Richardson of Florida. Very, very raw, but insane talent, the sort of Cam Newton type talent, just easy arm strength. That's a monster arm, quick, built like a brick outhouse, can really run. Kind of second coming of Cam Newton. And then CJ Stroud of Ohio State, another good quarterback who might fit with Indianapolis. I worry a bit about him outside of structure. When plays go awry, he has to make plays outside of the pocket or on the move. But in terms of being inside the pocket, and you look at, look, if I was to put CJ Stroud at Kentucky and Will Levis at Ohio State with all the players that CJ Stroud has to, on, you know, when you look at not only in the past with Chris Olave and with Garrett Wilson, but with the guys they had this year with Jaxon Smith-Njigba and Marvin Harrison and those guys, you know, Will Levis would be the unquestioned number one pick in the draft. And everybody we were talking about him as like the Andrew Luck of this draft. If you put CJ Stroud in that Kentucky offense, would CJ Stroud be a first round pick? And I think that's how you have to marry these things up sometimes. So for me, I think for D'Amico Ryans, you know, you get someone like, you get someone like Bryce Young, and you can bring him in and make him the face of that franchise with the face of the new head coach with Nick Cassero. And, you know, there's plenty of holes to fill on that defensive line. They've got a decent offensive line. They've got a good young running back. They need talent at receiver. They need talent at tight end. They need some defensive help on all three levels. Another cornerback to go opposite Derek Stingley. They've got the 12th overall pick as well. You could take a Devin Witherspoon. There's lots of defensive line talent. So I think Ryan's is in a really good place. And that defense has got some players. You know, there are some talent on that unit. So I think, you know, it shouldn't take him too long to turn it around. Staffing is always really important in terms of who he can bring in. But he's got the opportunity to really make a statement with something Houston haven't had really since Deshaun Watson and his legal troubles, which is to really bring in a guy that you can build around a quarterback.
Laramie Tunsil represents a huge amount of the cap, as does Brandon Cook well, and those both feel like renegotiable deals. And yeah, they are.
Plays so well as well that, you know, you have to keep it because he's just played consistently at an all pro level, you know, really throughout his career, actually. But certainly in Houston, he's been phenomenal. So it would be very hard to sort of, you know, to cut him, to release him, to trade him. I just think they can't do that, especially with a new quarterback coming in.
But they've already got good cap space. That could free up a lot more cap space there. So they could be very active in the free agent market. I think this is a huge offseason for Nick Caserio after they've done the back-to-back one-and-done head coaches. Like, I am always, Mike, a fan of having a married head coach and GM situation. Hopefully they are two people who get on very well, because that's what they will need to be. But yeah, I think there is reasons to be cheerful in Houston.
It's funny because I've had the pleasure of producing that Niners thing with you for the last few weeks, and we sent a video to the Niners last week, 15 minutes long, and Niners players, management talking about how impressed they were with D'Amico Ryans and his leadership skills and the fact that Shanahan was dying to keep him in for at least another year. And now,
because I can't stop asking people about him because I love him so much. Like, every defensive player I talk to me about D'Amico Ryans, tell me more.
But their reaction, man, they love him. And it's a massive loss for the Niners for a start in one sense. And I'd love to see maybe the potential. Could you see Fangio in San Fran? It's a different conversation. But there's a great podcast, folks, I'd recommend it. If anyone's watching this or listening to this, if you go onto the Gridiron social pages, Ollie Connolly and John Leonard have done one in the Read Optional called Home and Home this week, where they bring up a very good point. There's no point in bringing in D'Amico Ryans if you're not going to focus not just on the offense in terms of drafting somebody, but you need to bring in the right person as an OC. They've got interviews out for Bobby Slowick, the Bengals wide receivers coach, and also Anthony Lynn as well, who was the head coach of the Chargers. They need to make the right call there. As you boys have said, it's a huge opportunity. Get the guy in. work on it as a project, and give, more importantly, give D'Amico Ryans the time that he needs to develop his Texans team. I love Lovey. I'm glad he's gone. With
it's Bobby Slowick, another guy who's been loved in San Francisco, having seen
Troy Walters is one of them, isn't it? Troy Walters has been mentioned.
Having seen Bengals, Welker go and McDaniels go, and now Anthony Lynn, who came in to replace McDaniels and has done a decent job this year, he may go. Like, it is amazing that the 49ers have created, like, Shanahan and Lynch have got a really great record of turning these talents into viable head coaching and OC talents, and then below that and everything else. There is an absolute coaching factory for the rest of the league right now. But boy, am I bored of losing all those coaches every single year and having to replace them again. Oh, God.
Do you want a quick fun fact on Bobby Slowick? You probably know this, Will, but he spent 3 or 4 years, I think, working at Pro Football Focus.
That is genuinely fascinating. Like, that somebody...
I mean, I'm not a PFF fan, but I think that's quite interesting.
Yeah, I think it is as well. A knowledge and understanding of the game as an analyst. And then, well, it's funny, isn't it? Because Kyle Shanahan brought him in off the back of that PFF to come in as a defensive quality control coach. But the Rams went and hired Andy Benoit as a journalist, but as a tape guy, as a journalist. Like, it's funny that that's now kind of root into the NFL in a weird way. Anything more you guys want to say on the Houston situation?
I think not for me, Clive.
Any other big bits of news that we've not covered, Mike? I know you're more across this stuff.
I am currently trying to multitask to put our picks from the preseason up here for a laugh towards the end. In terms of news...
No one wants it.
my Twitter inbox doesn't need that shit.
I tell you what, Si, I have to publicly say that the reaction to it was sensational. I had the Chargers going to the Super Bowl, so like I can't really say anything. I have no other tidbits of news,
I had the Ravens going to the Super Bowl. We've both picked teams there who are clearly talented enough to go to a Super Bowl and have horrible injury luck. That's all we're saying, you know. As with the 49ers. 49ers Ravens was my Super Bowl. If those two are healthy, they could easily be Super Bowl teams.
Si, you had the Packers against the Bills. You weren't, well, yeah.
I mean, I was quite a long way away.
I did see somebody post something earlier about how the Eagles had the easiest strength of schedule by a country mile this year, faced a Giants team who probably shouldn't be in the playoffs yet and only there thanks to coaching, and then faced the 49ers hospital team. So, welcome to the Super Bowl and facing an actual opponent is very much what it might be for them a week on Sunday.
Yeah.
Are we getting Simon's Super Bowl pick? Is that happening?
Go for it,
basically, he's not going to be with us in Arizona, which is genuinely upsetting.
Yeah, I'm genuinely upset too. I think it will be the Eagles, actually. I think that they're just too good. I think they're too good a coach. They're too good coach, too well coached. They're too good on offense. They can move the ball in different ways. They can throw the quarterback and keep the ball and run. They've got a Pro Bowl running back in Miles Sanders. They're three deep at running back. With Boston Scott and with Kenny Gainwell, who's been excellent in the playoffs. They've got great receivers. They've got a great tight end. They've got the best offensive line in football by miles. I mean, they've got a 10-man rotation on that defensive line. The four top sack guys have got 11-plus sacks each. 49 sacks between the four of them. They've got really good linebackers. TJ Edwards is a really good player, underrated. And on the back end, you know, the best corner pairing in the NFL in Bradbury and Slay, Chauncey Gardner-Johnson, who's an absolute stud, and they're so deep with Kayvon Wallace and all those guys, and Marie Blankenship and Maddox, and you know that they are so deep. They're a good kicking game, excellent field goal kicker in Jake Elliott, and as much as I think Mahomes is amazing, Andy Reid is amazing. They put up 28. You know, I know the 49ers were shorthanded on offense, but they still had the defense. They put up 28 points on that defense. And KC's D isn't nearly as good as the 49ers D. And I think the Eagles will win. I think it'll be a really good game, because when you've got Patrick Mahomes, it's always going to be a good game. But I think the Eagles will win.
And we've definitely got Mike Tannenbaum joining us on Radio Row next week. And I think we're going to get Scott Pioli as well, hopefully. There has been a lot of talk this past week about how the Eagles are the first team in Super Bowl history to return to the Super Bowl within the same 5-year stretch with a different head coach and a different quarterback. But nobody's talking about the fact that they've still got Howie, motherfucker. that they've still got Howie Roseman, who is the absolute Don, who just, like, the off-season work that he did to bring in Chauncey Gardner-Johnson, to bring in, like, oh, our run game's a problem. Let me just go and sign the two of the best defensive tackles in the league over the past 10 years, who might be aging a little bit. Like, and Dominican Sue, I know it was against the 49ers hospital team, but he had one play where he got into the backfield and got to the quarterback on Sunday where you're like, that looks like a man 10 years younger than he is. Like, that is amazing. And when you, it reminds me so much of that team that won in Minnesota 5 years ago, because you can't tire out a defense that every time they get to substitute, they can take out the entire defensive line and not see a drop off.
And the amazing thing about that defensive line, I was reading the other day that Jonathan Gannon plays 10 players a minute. They all play at least 10 snaps. The highest plays 36 snaps, played 36 snaps. I think it was against the Giants, actually. The highest played 36 snaps, and the 10th guy on the list played at least 10 snaps. The ability to be able to do that, keep them fresh, whether that's, you know, you can move Hassan Reddick inside, Brandon Graham, you got, oh, here comes Fletcher Cox, oh, you know, and Jordan Davis, the first round pick, is not even healthy, you know, you've got Sue, you've got Joseph, you've got, I mean, it's just crazy what they're able to do, you know, and just...
And it's the first team ever to have, what, it's Sweat, Hargrave, Graham, and Reddick all have 10 plus sacks, and no team's ever done that before.
Yeah,
70 crazy sacks in the regular season. The nearest team to them was on 55.
That's ridiculous.
It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. And it might not even be their best unit, because I think the offensive line is their best unit, and that's, you know, that says it all, really.
So I'm not giving away my picks next week.
I really enjoyed people talking about how Jordan Mailata was the weak link on that offensive line, because he's given up. But the point is that he'd start at left tackle for 25 teams in the league.
26, 27 teams. I mean, he's literally a top five left tackle.
And he's the weak link on that offensive line, because he's the worst of the best. But yeah, that doesn't mean he's a bad player, mate.
You go across, right? You look at, he's probably the fifth or sixth best left tackle in the league. Landon Dickerson's top three or four left guard. Jason Kelce's a first ballot Hall of Famer, best center in the league. Isaac Somalu is, you know, top seven, top eight guy, absolute worst, and probably higher, probably top four or five. And then Lane Johnson's another first ballot Hall of Famer, best right tackle in the league. And you're just like, it's crazy. You look at the 49ers defense. There were times last week where nobody was making first contact till sort of 3 or 4 yards down the field. And that doesn't happen one or two plays. That happens like 16 or 17 plays. It's just phenomenal.
Right, I know we've got a wrap because Michael's got a bounce. So it was fun doing a live one again.
We can do this next week in Arizona for the crack. We can do it. Like, we'll just do it like this and have a bit of fun.
Oh, we're going to have a proper camera set up in Arizona, mate. We can do like...
We can fire the camera onto this, have us on the main screen, and bring in Clancy. We can zoom him in.
Love it. Love the idea. As always...
You have like Mina Kimes and people out there. Why don't you zoom me in when you've got actual proper people who can talk?
Sorry, Mina, just could you get off camera while we get Simon Clancy on? Thank you. I had confirmation she's joining us as well earlier, which is sensational. Amazing. Thank you so much for listening, watching, all that good stuff. At Gridiron on Twitter, at UK Gridiron on Instagram. Thank you so much for joining us. And as we get to the end, we get a little comment saying Harry Roseman deserves a lot of credit. I agree, Al Forrest.
He does, Al Forrest.
Brilliant stuff. Thank you for watching and listening. This has been the Gridiron Show.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.